This is podcast number 184 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I want to give you examples of learning by heart. I've taken a break from doing podcasts while I've been working on the Take Fives, but I'm almost done with those and hope to get back to doing some more podcasts. I've had some thoughts concerning this month's topic of the Holy Land. They actually apply to the study of anything and everything, but I'll put my thoughts in the context of this month's topic. I thought, again, how impossible it is that we take in the whole of anything the first time around. It takes layers and layers of adding a piece here and there to get a full picture of what we're trying to learn. It's like weaving strings into a tapestry. The world in which Jesus lived doesn't exist anymore as it was in his day. The only way I can recreate that world is in my own heart and in my mind. So I've been reading several books whose writers have the gift of painting pictures with words, and the places he walked have become vivid to me. The shore of the Sea of Galilee, the fishing villages, the wild flower-covered hills around his little home in the obscure village of Nazareth, the mount he would retire to pray and to teach the people. I've come to appreciate his desire to stay away from the crowded cities. He didn't spend much time dwelling there, and he far preferred the simple, hard-working, salt-of-the-earth kind of people over the highly educated and wealthy Jews of the city who weren't open to hear what he had to teach them. Some of the books I've read are The Robe by Lloyd Douglas. That's a favorite that I've read and reread several times. I love it. I also picked up a book from my grandfather's library, The Nazarene, written by a Jew, Sholem Ash, who had previously received fame by bringing Jewish life, especially the life of the Polish Jews, to life. In this book, he portrays the life of Jesus through the eyes of Judas Iscariot, and when he published his book, he was accused of converting to Christianity. He said that he wrote the book to bridge the gap between Jews and Christians, but that he had retained his Jewish faith. Nevertheless, he fell out of favor for having written that book. He wrote two other books at the same time, The Apostle, about the Apostle Paul, and Mary, of course, about Jesus' mother, but I haven't gotten to those yet. But these books added a layer of details to the landscape I am painting in my mind's eye. This last year, I savored Frederick Farrar's Life of Christ, which is quoted frequently in James Talmage's Jesus the Christ, which I also love. And now I'm making my way through an interesting book from the 1950s, The Day Christ Died, written by Jim Bishop. I've also added to my collection of fine art paintings of the life of Jesus. And I have to admit, the more I learn, the more I turn away from many of the modern renditions. They just don't have the reverence to them that I feel he deserves. My husband and I also recently started watching The Chosen that many of you are watching, and I love another layer and another look at life during the time that he was on the earth. As I was playing the organ on Sunday, I realized how these pictures are such a part of me now that they add depth to everything. As I played, there is a green hill far away. The scenes passed through my mind's eye, almost as though I was there. And the effect was the stirring up of feelings of how much I love him, and more importantly, feeling his love for me. He is real because I can see him. The rules, the laws, and commandments themselves do not have that power in our lives. They simply give us a way to express the love we feel. But we have to feel that love first. And isn't helping our children to learn to love the Lord and to feel his love for them one of the most important lessons we can teach? To do that requires that we continually layer these pictures into their hearts. Isn't it interesting that there isn't one gospel telling the life of Christ, but four? Four different versions, four different perspectives. Four different points of view that actually have conflicting facts. But doesn't that teach us something about the priority of our learning? We who seem to make facts the most important part of the lesson? Another wonderful book that has brought the Holy Land to life for me is Donna Nielsen's Beloved Bridegroom, where she talks about Jewish family traditions and customs. She let me bring it back into print, and you can pick up a copy in our store or on Amazon. She and I have had some fascinating conversations, although I tell her I feel like a preschooler talking to a Harvard professor. She teaches me so much. And she introduced me to another woman, Yvonne Bent, who sent me a manuscript of a book she has recently written that tells of her journey as an artist. I asked her if I could share parts of the book with you, and that's where I want to go next, because she is an example of the kind of learning that I keep trying to describe to you. Remember the quote I keep sharing from Charlotte Mason's writings? True education is between a child's soul and God. Let me let her describe her interesting learning adventure as she layers in understanding and finds herself led in paths she never knew existed, line upon line, a little here and a little there. I spoke to her on the phone and I could feel her passion for life and learning. It's contagious and tangible, and she's given me permission to share what she wrote. This kind of learning cannot happen if you follow a classic textbook study of subjects, or if you don't allow the freedom to follow the rabbit trails. Here's Yvonne. In the spring of 1983, after a dramatic life-changing event, I began a regular study of Scripture. My daily regimen of reading through Holy Writ was my wake-up call to a life of story, excitement, and spiritual growth. It became a daily habit for me to arise early, read for about 30 minutes, write in my journal, and have my morning prayer and devotional. It was nearly 20 years before I began to feel that I was in some kind of a rut. I loved doing my daily reading, but I was weary of reading and rereading the same material. I wanted more, but did not know how to go about having a greater experience with God through the reading experience. One morning as I sat in the window seat after completing another day of my routine, I contemplated my situation. I had just finished reading through all the same material for the 40th time. I knew that because I kept a tally in the back of my Bible and made a record of the date I completed the book. I sat in my little alcove with the morning sun streaming into the window, holding my scriptures in my lap, and explained to the Lord my predicament. Dear God, you know I love your word. I love to read the scriptures, but I want more. I did not hear any bells go off in my head, but a calm, reassuring feeling gently flooded over me, letting me know that my feelings were known to heaven. In a few short weeks, I found myself thinking I would alter the form of my studies somewhat. I was very aware that Christ spoke in parables to the people. He used different elements in which to make a point with his audience. I decided that I would approach my studies in a different way. I went to the New Testament and located every place where Jesus said either, I give you, or I am, or ye are. I found reference to living water, the salt of the earth, dross, the bread of life, the vine and tender branches, the shepherd and the sheep, the stars in heaven and the sands of the sea, and the tree of life. There were many other references besides these, but I could concentrate on the study of water, salt, grain for bread, plants and trees, clay, sheep, and stars. I happened to come across Masura Emoto's book on the hidden messages in water, which explained the ability that water had to hold information. I began to do word reference checks on everywhere that water was mentioned in the scripture. I received a great deal of information, graciously given me by a friend who was a Bible scholar. I was also directed to look at number in Scripture. I studied Hebrew. I took an interest in the Holy Land. I began to see a richer and deeper field of delight as I studied the history of the people that lived at the time of Christ. I read Josephus. My Scripture study took me on a ride past the Torah, Jewish commentary on the Old and New Testament. My studies became exciting once again. I purchased books on water. I read about famous men who had studied the properties of water. I bought a water machine that mimics the water flowing from the mountainside over rocks, swirling in vortex as it travels. I drank that water and noticed a change in the taste and the ease in swallowing water that had a tighter molecular bond after taking a journey through a vortex. My appetite for learning was insatiable. The limits I was willing to soar, sail, traverse, or climb were unknown to my spirit. However, though I was focused on studying certain things, the road I was traveling was still unclear to me. Not to say that I was on uncharted territory, it's just that I wasn't aware I was on the royal road to sacred geometry. And then she goes on to describe how it was that she really quite miraculously had a book brought into her awareness called The Beginner's Guide to the Universe by Michael A. Schneider. And she continues, "This book is a compilation of geometric shapes and a myriad of matching meanings from the numbers 1 to 10. Printed on newsprint, the pages were covered with illustrations galore. The minute my eyes hit the pictures, I was a goner. I loved that book like nothing I've ever loved in print since the pair of silver slip-on shoes my mother let me buy when I was in third grade. I drooled over it in the privacy of my own room. Every page and every picture spoke to me. It was like coming home. By the time I got hold of the geometry book, I was completely on fire about studying the elements in this fashion. I had no idea that so many shapes existed in so many places, in such an organized fashion, all over the world, woven in, over, and through everything." And one of the places that she found those shapes was in music. She wrote, "Classical music is built on the divine proportion of the chords and is woven in and out, through and through, in the mathematical proportions found in fifths. The human body is a study of the divine proportion that would take a lifetime to explain it. All nature is singing the songs of geometry." And then I've talked a lot about the combination of heart and mind and art and science, and really it's male and female. So I was curious when I read this, but the thing I learned most crucial to my education at that time had to do with the complement of the male-female in all things. If this element of the male and female were not there, the whole composition was incomplete. It doesn't matter if it is architecture, math, science, music, language, or nature. The result is the same. The work looks and feels wrong, unbalanced, and unfruitful. Both parts need to be there. At this point, I felt compelled to turn this knowledge into some form of art. I wanted to create something profound and beautiful. But what and how would I do it? What kind of medium would I use to demonstrate the marvel that I felt heaven was imparting to me? And that's when she started on a journey of learning how to work with stained glass, which took her down a whole nother rabbit trail. If you remember the pattern for learning that I've taught you so much about, that is the final stage, that creation, that when you have the desire and you learn the rules and the skills, that the next natural step is that desire to use that knowledge to create something to make the world really a better place for what you've learned. I won't go into detail about her journey with that. Let me just skip over and read you a couple more parts. She said, "As I worked on my project, I learned important life lessons that applied to other things in my life. I learned the importance of having a plan and always referring to that plan. I learned the necessity of understanding the personalities of the medium I was working with. I learned that it was a fool's errand to dive into something so big without any experience. And I learned that God knew how badly I wanted this. And I knew that He held my hand all along the way. He guided me to the people who could teach me what I needed to know. He protected me against my stubborn ignorance. I began to see patterns coming to light. I felt more like Miss Marple or even Sherlock Holmes, finding one brilliant clue after another. I knew I was in the act of solving an amazing mystery. In 1999, I decided to homeschool my youngest two children for a number of reasons. I read the classics with a voracious appetite I didn't recognize as my own. I looked under rocks, behind closed doors, and read in between the lines. I was having the time of my life. I don't know how much my children valued the experience and freedom of homeschooling, since they had nothing to compare it to. However, it was a ride that turned my life around, gave me joy and excitement, turned me on to people who had passed away but left their experience and words in their wake. It felt to me like these deceased authors had left their precious words of wisdom through their own experiences, like crumbs of bread left for Hansel and Gretel. These crumbs were all left for me to find later in my life when I could appreciate their value. Just like a river of water that had run down the stream years before, it had returned like the gentle rains, nourishing my parched soul. I was receiving nourishment from many sources as I worked on my art piece. I'll stop there, but wouldn't you agree? Yvonne Bent is a well-educated heart. Bye-bye. See you next time.